I'm Alec Baldwin, and you're listening to Marketing Trends and the Leeds Art Week.
Welcome to Marketing Trends. I'm your host, Jeremy Bergeron, the Vice President of Media Strategy at Mission.org. And this is the show where twice a week, you'll get VIP access into the hearts and minds of some of the most influential marketers in the world. On Marketing Trends, we'll do two things. We'll go deep on a human level, and we'll go even deeper on the nitty-gritty of what makes for the most successful marketers and strategies today. I'm glad you're here. Now let's get into it. There's a notion among marketers that the way to provide the best customer experience is to have the richest data. After all, to chief marketing officers and most modern marketing leaders, data is basically the key to unlocking customer success. But to provide those marquee customer experiences, there's a myth swirling around that the only way to have success is if all your data sets live in one place. You need the mythical single source of truth. But is a single source of truth actually attainable in today's oversaturated MarTech ecosystem? Paul Cohen is the CMO of FreshBooks, and he isn't so sure.
Having a single source of truth is like next to impossible. I haven't been at any organization where anybody said, man, our data is in a perfect state. Here it is. Here's our 360 view of the customer. We're done. Clap your hands and walk away. It just doesn't exist. You need to have your single sources of truth in terms of what you believe success looks like, and everybody's aligned to that. But I think being able to have that 360 view of the customer is the hard part.
Having a better understanding of who your customers are is something all marketers are striving for today. And it's something that Paul and his team are really working toward. But while a single source of truth might not be attainable, there are avenues to create a clearer picture to work with. On this episode of Marketing Trends, Paul joined me for a fun conversation covering a host of topics, including what it will mean to build FreshBooks data strategy to target an SMB market in dire need of reliable insights. Paul and I also discussed how FreshBooks reorganized its marketing department to eliminate siloed segments, and why the best marketers need to have an understanding of their sales counterparts. Enjoy. Your content is at the heart of what you do. It connects your company to others, teaches them, guides them, and inspires them. But creating, managing, and editing content at scale is often very chaotic and difficult. Empower your content teams with Brightspot Content Management System, made specifically for marketers and corporate communications leaders. No more waiting for a developer to have to piece things together. Put the power to create and deliver powerful yet complex digital experiences into the hands of your marketers with a comprehensive suite of ready-to-use tools and functionality. Bring a bright spot to your tech stack, your customers, your team, with the Brightspot Content Management System. Visit brightspot.com/marketing trends to learn more. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Marketing Trends. This is Jeremy Bergeron, VP of Strategy here at Mission.org. Today, I'm talking to Paul Cohen, the Chief Marketing Officer for FreshBooks. Paul, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. Good to meet y'all too.
Awesome. Great to connect, man. I'm really honored. I was doing some research on you, and you've been on a lot of podcasts, my friend.
I get placed on a lot, and sometimes it's actually because people find me interesting.
Yes. Well, I could see it being a bit of both for sure. And I will say, your background is super interesting. I've heard you talk about, you know, the upbringing a bit and, you know, selling booze. And I want to touch on that for our audience as well. I think it's interesting, an interesting place, kind of how you got started. But we're honored, man. And also, I just want to mention, I mean, congratulations. It doesn't take very long for anyone to kind of Google you guys and see that you've just kind of been propelled into the unicorn status with a valuation of over $1 billion.
Yeah, it's a long time coming, but I think the team is just kind of a testament both to the category and just where where this category is going. So I think we're, you know, we're 15, 17 years in as a company, but there's still a huge amount of growth within enabling small businesses digitally and both in North America and globally.
I love it. Yeah. Congrats indeed, man. I know that it's just, there's so much momentum behind the brand and behind some of the things you guys are doing. But you know, when I see that, I see, okay, pay attention to FreshBooks. Let's see what these guys are up to. And just it's a major milestone. So congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's start a little bit just kind of context on you, Paul. Are you from Canada originally? Is that right?
Yeah. So FreshBooks is a Toronto based company up here in Toronto, Canada. We're still, our headquarters are in Toronto. We have opened up offices down in the States in Raleigh and in San Antonio, over in Amsterdam in Europe. And we also have offices in Mexico and Croatia as well. So the company has been a long time kind of Canadian based, but now we're, in the last 2 years, we've been really kind of focused on a bit more of a global footprint.
Awesome. And then you yourself, where are you from?
Yeah, I'm in Toronto right now. I'm like, okay. I'm 3 hours north of Toronto. So okay. up in the woods, where this work from home thing has enabled me to kind of hang out. So, but yeah, again, it's once we get back to traveling, I'm anticipating and hoping that I'll be able to get back and go to some of the other locations too.
Mm, cool. What are some of your favorite kind of activities to do out there where you're at?
Yeah, I love getting outdoors. So we have four very distinct seasons up here. Right now it's nice and hot and sunny. So being on lakes and all that kind of fun stuff. And in the winter time, I like to cruise out to the mountains and try to get as much skiing in as I possibly can.
Nice. Awesome. I'll join you in those. Are some of my favorite activities too. So see you there. Who are some marketers that kind of continue to inspire you and why?
Yeah, it's interesting. I get asked like this question, the question of like, who do you look up to and what books do you read and all of this kind of stuff. And it's kind of interesting because, like, you know, I look at like companies and I look at people and I try to unpack what makes people tick or how people get motivated to do things. So, you know, where I really look, like, you know, early on in my career, I was really, you know, I read, I think, Branson's first autobiography, which was like the first one that really kind of made me rethink how to think about businesses and brands and experiences. I worked at Rogers, which is a telco up here, which was run by this gentleman named Ted Rogers. And I was able to kind of meet with him and present to him on a bunch of occasions. And he just kind of helped frame up, like, you know, if the laws of nature don't work for you, you should change the laws of nature. And that kind of thinking has really kind of inspired me in terms of like, always tackling problems in different ways and not just trying to be not being constrained by the rules or the kind of the way that the table's been set for you. So I kind of look towards folks who are like that and try to understand what makes them tick.
Mm, wonderful. Yeah, I've actually been to one of the Rogers offices in Toronto. That's a massive brand. For those who don't know about them, they're huge, certainly in Canada. But that's cool. So what does it look like for Paul to sit down and just think? Like, do you stare off into space? Do you read, ride a bike? Do you like to maybe, you know, listen to classical music? Like, what does it look like for you to just sit down and think?
Yeah, I mean, I like my quiet time. I'm an early morning person. So, you know, I usually kind of get up around 5 o'clock, and that's when I do my best work, is in the morning. So if I ever am scheduling things, like whether it's sessions or working sessions with teams or folks, times when I need to kind of be like either very thoughtful or work with folks, the mornings are my time. And it can range from many different ways. I like to kind of change up the ways that I do stuff, but it's generally like quiet. I love the solitude of being able to do something like go for a run and bang through ideas in my head. But man, you got to write them down like as soon as you're done, or else if you try to do it in 2 hours, it's just like usually a bit of an incoherent mess where I forgot how things were structured. But that's how I kind of do things. I like to kind of work through to my head in a nice quiet space and then get it all down on paper or into some slides or something.
I know you've talked about this story before on other shows, and I think it's interesting. I'd like to hear the genesis of kind of how you got started in marketing.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I've always loved marketing as I was a kid. Like I took courses in graphic design and stuff back when there wasn't things like PCs or you know, so you're literally drawing it out and everything. And I just love the power of persuasion. So I mentioned it before, like my first kind of foray into like being an entrepreneur or understanding pain points and need was bootlegging booze and getting really great fake ID and then getting a couple people on my side to help go and take orders and take a pretty hefty margin on that. And so, you know, I've always kind of had this like, hey, always had this side gig hustle go and just figure out like understand needs and solve those needs. So, you know, I started off like at agencies and realized that that really wasn't the right environment for me. At the time, like I just knew I love technology. And so early on in my career, a colleague, a friend of mine gave me some advice. He's like, just, you know, find a wave and something you love and ride it. And so once I kind of heard that, I was like, yeah, you know, I love technology and I love marketing. So how do I just build this career around like technology and marketing? And so I've always just been trying to like identify those waves. You know, I went through the big dot-com bust and I was working for Excite at Home at the time. And I moved over to Rogers, was there for a good like 5.5 years. And that kind of gave me that good, like how to manage a large organization, like a 30,000 person organization and big bureaucracy and politics. And how do you move an oil tanker? And through my career, then I've just been like, okay, what's the next thing and the next area that I find exciting where I can go and learn and really kind of roll up my sleeves and understand what's going on. So I've kind of gone from there to a SaaS startup in the social media space to this kind of company Spin Master in the toy space and then Shutterstock. And that now I've kind of found myself over here at FreshBooks. You know, another technology company, but I get the small business owner. So it's fun to be in this space and being able to build stuff for them.
So now you're the CMO of FreshBooks. Tell us a little bit about the role, right? So what are some of the projects that you're currently working on? And also what are some challenges you're facing now?
Yeah, I mean, tons of projects and tons of challenges. So I got into the organization and you know, I always joke the three things a CMO does is like reorg, rebrand, and retire, or, you know, whether it's on their own volition or not. But it's, and I did like two of those things. So, you know, usually coming in, if an organization is looking for a CMO, they generally have some sort of a problem that needs to be fixed. And so ours was like a lot, it was actually a lot of organizational issues and where marketing was just separated into a lot of different places. So I've been at the company for about 2 years now. I'm just coming up to 2 years. And so we've done one big reorg and then have done some smaller enhancements and stuff like that to get the team organized the right way. So really right now, like first it was like getting the foundation set up for what we need to do to start to scale and to move into these different markets and stuff. And now it's about like, how do we now shift gears from now that that foundation, we're in a good space. How do we move that into like making this more systemic and operational and so we could drive growth in these different regions and drive growth in our core area and do it all where the unit economics make sense. So, you know, there's like most organizations, it's we're really balancing like what our product roadmap looks like, how do we continue the enhancements of our existing product and improve it. And then the things that we need to do just to be able to scale the organization and balancing those three areas together to make sure that we're delivering.
So you've stated before that, you know, one thing that really attracted you to FreshBooks was that the company wanted to be aggressive in its growth strategy. You know, FreshBooks started as this kind of small startup. It's now this, you know, global operation. And so when it comes to growth marketing and how you look at that, like what is your strategy currently and how does the business continue to really grow moving forward?
Yeah, that's a great question. FreshBooks has been a really great, really great at attracting kind of this solopreneur and the small side of the SMB spectrum into what started off as an invoicing platform and has evolved into being an accounting platform. And they did it through a great self-serve channel. So we had like, we were really kind of appealing to a specific segment of the market through this one channel. You know, as a marketer, you come in, you're like, hey, great. How can we expand? If I want to sell more stuff, why don't we try to sell it to more people? And why don't we try to sell it through more channels? And so, and that's really where the company was going. So its scale needs to be achieved through these different areas so that, you know, if one channel goes down, we've got lots of other areas that are actually doing well. So we're currently, you know, investing heavily into our channel diversifications. How do we sell through more places like resellers and enabling a sales organization? and looking at other partners and integration partners and a couple other programs that we're going to be running to help improve the reach that we currently have. And then it's like, great, now how do we appeal to more segments? So if we can expand our channels and broaden the segments that we're currently going after, we obviously can hit a much, much broader portion of the market. So, and then underneath that, if we're like super focused and still very focused in terms of the types of segments that we're trying to expand to, obviously moving more up market in terms of like larger organizations, still kind of on that micro side of the SMB world. We're not going mid-market or anything like that. But, you know, making sure that we're really focused at service-based businesses. We're not going to go chasing down into the e-com path, but we're really kind of focused at servicing the customers. We do a good job at being able to get today and expanding that. So that's what we're really kind of looking at now. And how do we reach those customers in more places? How do we expand our self-service and performance marketing machine into doing some more sniper firing and finding different areas that we could find customers?
So something that we're seeing a lot more and more is the kind of B2C strategies being used for B2B marketing. True for FreshBooks? And if so, how so?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of just either applying B2B to B2C or B2C to B2B. It's just like this, you know, everyone's always, at the end of it, it's all like, you know, we're B2B customers are also consumers. And so all of the places and media and stuff like that they're participating in, they're all participating in different ways. So, you know, even when I've been at Shutterstock, I was running enterprise and SMB. We were doing a ton of lead generation off of Facebook and Instagram. Like I knew how much like specific Instagram ads were driving in terms of pipeline and revenue. And we'd be closing like six-figure deals from like Pepsi off of an Instagram ad that we had that was targeted through some ABM activity or account-based marketing activity. Mm-hmm. So I think like just from the media selection standpoint, there's lots of opportunity to just continue to expand. And so that was one of the things even coming in here, because at, you know, FreshBooks, we were really, really focused on like SEM and affiliates and kind of like that standard SaaS funnel and those predictable sources of revenue. And so I was like, hey, we need to expand and you know, get more awareness, get more understanding of the brand in different areas and using some of these other tools in the toolkit to be able to do that. So going into places like Facebook and Instagram and TikTok and stuff might not seem like natural places, but were areas that we went into right away. And it was funny because when we first started doing it, we failed miserably. Like our cost per trial. So, you know, the whole funnel is someone comes into a trial and we convert them after 30 days, et cetera, et cetera. Our cost per trial was in the thousands of dollars. You know, our ARPU and our LTV, our lifetime value, wouldn't support that. So we had to just get it to work. So, you know, working with some, you know, agencies that didn't really get what we were trying to do. And so we had to move them out and hire some new people to manage the stuff and just really empower the folks who are in there. And we've been able to get it down into the sub kind of $10 mark, which has been nice.
So you're really this, you know, this B2B solution. And it seems like, you know, your distribution strategy can look more like this D2C e-commerce play.
Yeah. And that's like, yeah, so that's where it was interesting. So for even me coming in is Mike McDermott, the CEO. You know, he was really looking for, he'd been looking for a CMO for a good part of a year, year and a half. And, you know, when I started chatting with them and they were describing what they wanted, I kind of laughed because I'm like, well, this person doesn't exist, what you're looking for, because you're looking for a person who gets, who's done this D2C, who understands like SaaS, who's also done enterprise and SMB, who has also been an entrepreneur and has started up their own businesses and can roll up their sleeves to get all this stuff. I'm like, there's not that many people in the world who do it. And I'm like close to it. I'm not a perfect fit, but I was the closest type of person that they could find to do this. But no rhyme or reason. I never said from a career path standpoint, I want to be this person. But it was like, hey, sometimes things just work out. You know, more organizations, I think, are moving down this way. More enterprise and SMB are trying to go into the D2C world and the direct-to-consumer brands they're trying to invest in direct sales force. So it's having this kind of working knowledge of how all of these different channels work is kind of critically important these days.
I like it. So sales and marketing teams have a reputation for being out of sync with each other, right? Yeah. I mean, these days we're seeing this near complete shift to digital interactions. And that means that organizations have to continue to improve sales marketing alignment going forward. If they don't do that, then they might risk losing ground to competitors who have this kind of stronger performance in that arena. What has your experience been with kind of sales marketing alignment throughout your career, right? How have those experiences really informed your approach for kind of bringing those things together, especially today?
Yeah, I mean, it's always good when there's a healthy tension between sales and marketing. You know, the organizations need to have that. Marketing needs to be kept on their toes, and as well as the sales organization. Where it's unhealthy is when you have like some, I've seen organizations where a marketing organization is at the service of sales. That's not going to work. And similarly, when sales is just kind of waiting around for marketing to supply them with stuff and isn't in more of a power position, that's problematic as well. So there definitely needs to be a good kind of system of puts and takes. I think it all comes down to motivation and OKRs and what are different people's objectives. I think, you know, a lot of salespeople are like water and they flow towards the money. And so however they're comped is going to be however you need to be able to build your business and what you're going to expect at the end of it. So, you know, if people have different comp models based off of the fact that they on their booking value, or they're not allowed to book deals under a certain size, or they have to get a certain type of customer, all of those things are going to help drive where you're trying to go. I think with similarly, like I think in marketers really need to understand the pains that sales go through, and often they don't get into the weeds on understanding what's it like to actually go through the process. So I think where it works really well is if you get marketers who understand what it's like to go through the sales process, who know how to pitch the product. If you can get marketers that are actually pretty good at selling, then that's even better, because then everybody understands the different types of frustrations and pain points. So if you get alignment on that, on the core metrics and aligning what different people are comped on, then generally most of the stuff will sort itself out at the end, as well as having a good understanding of what the realistic expectations are in terms of where lead volume is going to come from. So if marketing only has to supply like 5 to 10% of the leads to the sales organization, then they're not going to be really valued that much, because the sales is out hunting for their own stuff. But if they're supplying 90% of the leads, then all of a sudden it's a bit of a different story and a different type of dynamic. So I've always worked towards trying to get a better balance between who's supplying revenue into the organization.
Mm. Do you have any favorite campaigns you've worked on in the past?
Yeah, I have a few. I think in recent memory, you know, when I was at Shutterstock, we had this great account-based marketing program where we were targeting a bunch of tier one CPGs. And, you know, with a lot of this stuff, it takes a lot of work. Like a lot of account-based marketing takes a ton of work to get it up and running in terms of the build of the creative. It has to be super tailored to the different organizations. And then as you start using the tools and targeting down into the organizations, you're always kind of a little suspect on whether or not these things are going to work. And it was funny because as we had launched this campaign and we got responses from four CMOs from four different CPGs, Reckitt Benckiser, L'Oreal, Nestle, we got CMOs saying, why are you using our brand in our advertising? And we didn't give you the rights to do that. So they saw the ads. They didn't kind of get that they were targeted only at them. And so it actually started a conversation with a couple of the brands where we explained what account-based marketing was, because they'd never done it. And they're like, oh, okay. And so with two of the brands, it ended up where we went in and did like a lunch and learn with them to say, hey, here's how you could do account-based marketing, some of the targeting capabilities that exist. So it actually generated this like kind of weird outcome, which the salespeople were super happy with, because they're like, oh, anything that I can do to help engage the prospects here would be fantastic. So it was great validation that the programs actually worked, and we did close deals out of them too. So we were pretty happy. And just another one was what was funny was like way back when I was at Rogers, I relaunched the internet stick category. So we had no product manager on it, nobody running the go-to-market. And so I took over that campaign. This is like in 2008. And as we kind of looked at it, it was such a simple value prop where it's like, there was those devices that you could take, you plug into your computer, right? Just those little USB sticks and you get internet anywhere. And like the people are just like, you can get it anywhere. Like when we did all the research and everything, and it was like, okay, let's just have like the simplest messaging. And so we just basically just said, you can get it here. And so we ran a fairly, sizable campaign. And we went from like a run rate of like 1,000 units a month to doing 80,000. And subsequently, that was like the month I got let go from Rogers. So, my time there was done, and it's always good to get let go. And so it was like my swan song and leaving the organization was having one of the best campaigns in the history of the organization in terms of revigorating and wow. revitalizing a category. So that was cool.
You talked about ABM. Has that been a focus at all for FreshBooks? And what are some of the things y'all are doing, if so?
Yeah. So our customers today, they look a lot like consumers. So to find the small side of the SMB market is really, really difficult to find. And the challenge with that is we're competing with everyone. So, I might be competing with NetSuite on accounting keywords. And so it's like if you're in, of course, QuickBooks, but when you're trying to slug it out with Intuit and Oracle, they got some pretty deep pockets. Then on the other side, because I'm just trying to find consumers who look like everyone else, I'm then competing with every other, packaged goods company or other brand advertiser, folks who aren't cared about cost per click or performance. So one of our biggest challenge is that the data, when you get into sub-mid market, is horrendous. So all of the plays that you would use and all the tools that you would use on the ABM side, they just don't exist for the folks that we are looking for. Plus, our ARPU in our category is lower, and so LTVs are not as high as doing enterprise deals. So you can't get that super laser focused type of approach. We have to drive way more tonnage. Not to say we're not going to get there in terms of product enhancements and being able to build up more packaging, but we're kind of doing more of the one to many. Type of ABM approach as opposed to the one to few or one to one.
Got it. That makes sense. Yeah. Every company wants to be data driven, especially it's the new oil. We all know this, right? Data is everything. It's key. At FreshBooks, how are you using data to really best reach your customers? And then also how are you using data to create unique experiences for them?
In coming in, it was really interesting because I look at the data that we have. So we, when I say, hey, it's really hard to find data on small businesses. We've got lots and lots of customers with lots and lots of data on, better than what most organizations selling data on SMBs actually have. We have all of their income and transaction history and the types of companies that they're working with and the services that they're offering and all of their contact information, right? So we have a lot that we can do on the data side. We do a lot of the standard stuff you would do in terms of building lookalike audiences and models and predictive models in terms of trying to find more people. But again, it's hard to predict which companies are going to be successful. You tell me which that dog walking service is going to be better than that dog walking service. And it's really hard to be able to do. But as we've been looking at this stuff and looking into things like the expense data that we have, there's some stuff that's dripping with goodness in there. So we've been doing a lot of stuff turning that towards our customers and towards the market. So, being able to go in and understand what's actually happening in terms of what SMBs are spending their money on, where are tradespeople spending their cash. Through COVID, we did a lot of analysis on our data to really understand what the dip and recovery was looking at by market, by trade, by vertical. The government was super interested in this data, both in Canada and the US, where they were trying to get more real-time access to data so that they could start to build the different types of relief and support programs that they were putting together. And then as we were putting this stuff out, obviously the owners and small business owners were like, I love that. I'd love to know how much we're actually how we're doing and am I tracking right and where am I versus the index of everybody else in my area. So I think we're just scratching the surface in terms of what we can do with that because, I think knowledge is power and the more that we can give to our customers to know how they should price their services or know relative to other folks in the area, if they're charging the appropriate amounts or if they're leaving money on the table are all interesting things that we're looking at helping provide back to our customers.
How about this idea? I think I read that there was, you're using essentially gated content to really balance the depreciation of third-party cookies. How are you doing that?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a huge issue in terms of when cookies go away and just the demand that marketers and brands need to have more first-party data. you know, we're, as I mentioned before, we have this big kind of attrition funnel. We bring a lot of people in into the top of our funnel. We're getting like, you know, a couple million prospect uniques a month to our website, which is great. And then a very small percentage of those, or a smaller percentage of those, are then converting into a trial. And so we've got this big middle area of people that we could be doing something with. And so one thing was just like, hey, we need to start to get more content. We didn't really follow that approach before. And so we're just trying to find our real high value pieces and doing what we can to be able to start to collect more data and augment that data so that we can really understand who's getting there. Eventually, who knows, we may be able to do stuff with that data and be able to provide that back to other marketers or other like-minded marketers or folks within our partner or integrator set in terms of being able to market them, even if they don't convert into FreshBooks. But what we're trying to do is really build out a massive database of folks who are looking for or off of any kind of intent in the accounting space. So underneath that is like a huge amount of invoicing or project manager, scheduling software, all these different types of things that small businesses are looking to do. So now the kind of key piece is like, what's value? Like what's the valuable content that people are looking for? So we're doing everything from building microsites with all of that expense invoicing data or expense data or invoicing data to see how people are actually trending, to doing stuff like, you know, longer form content and research pieces that we have. So we're really investing in that so that we can be ahead of the game come next year or whenever that elusive date is in terms of deprecation.
Do you believe that a single source of truth is the best possible strategy, you know, when it comes to data aggregation for marketers?
Well, that'd be awesome. But having a single source of truth is like next to impossible. So, it's, you know, I haven't been at any organization where anybody said, man, our data is in perfect state. Here it is. Here's our 360 view of the customer. Like, we're done. Clap your hands and walk away. It just doesn't exist. So I think like one, yeah, you need to have your single sources of truth in terms of what you believe success looks like, and everybody's aligned to that. And there may be some challenges. And as long as everybody knows the challenges or the gaps that you have in terms of fully understanding it, that's fine. But I think like being able to have that 360 view of the customer is the hard part. And that being the single source of truth for what you're going to be doing, both from a product development standpoint, from a comms standpoint, from a support standpoint, and from a sales standpoint, making sure all those systems are working together. So that's like a big challenge that we've been working on for a while, and investing in different tools and technology for us to be able to orchestrate the best type of customer experiences.
Makes sense. So most marketers, you know, have this defined bucket. They have these buckets of who their customers are. But yeah. FreshBooks is like very specific about how it defines its customers. Why is specificity so important at FreshBooks? Like, why is that strategy so key? And how has that really benefited your marketing efforts?
Yeah, it's really interesting because, like we were talking about before, that, you know, that SMB universe looks so homogenous and big, right, and broad. You know, we're really focused on the service owner. And so, you know, that might not seem unique, but when we say the service-based industry is the biggest category within the small business world, e-commerce, and because that kind of basically eliminates e-commerce, retail, and restaurants. And so this is the area that we kind of hone in on. Then when we talk about owners, what we're really focused on is building the best UI and experience that an owner can have in terms of understanding what's going on in their business. We are 100% focused at competing in the accounting category. So Xero and QuickBooks are the Goliaths that we're going after.
Yep.
They are focused on accountants. So we're really 100% focused on like, what do we need to build to help owners do their work? Knowing that workflows with accountants is incredibly important, and that's going to be a very important channel for us in engaging with accountants. But what we don't want is what the QuickBooks experience is today, where an owner goes and logs in, they're like, oh God, I don't want to touch this thing ever. And they walk away from it. What we want to have is an owner embrace it and use it as a critical tool for their day-to-day business. And that's where all of the kind of the operating system for the service-based business is. And it's kind of funny because as we unpack that, then I think the hard part then is like, what do you build? And when you're trying to appeal to all of these different types of verticals underneath, that's where we get specific in terms of like trying to trying to build something for field services professionals. And so folks who are out and on the go and all of the different verticals that might fit in there and understanding the pain points and needs that they have. And then that will definitely have a halo effect beyond the specific segment that we're going after. So I think as long as we're specific and we're big enough in terms of solving the problems, then that always halos to a broader community of people.
So you talked about this a little bit earlier, and I want to just circle back a bit because you joined FreshBooks in the midst of the company going through a rebranding process, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So take us through the experience of joining the company in the middle of such a super important, you know, part of the company as a CMO, and how did you lead through that process?
Yeah. So, it was really interesting because most times you go through a rebrand, you know, it's led by marketing or a group or a centralized service, and it's done kind of from a top down level, and then it's pushed out. And it's really about a project management exercise to make sure that all of the different places get the logos and colors swapped out and all of that kind of stuff. And there's little meaning, and the organizational change management process is really, really hard. I came in and it was the opposite. All the hard work was done. Like, within the first month of me being there, there was like a brand fair where everybody in the company had come together and was proposing different types of business ideas, campaigns, product enhancements, whatever they might be that fit the ethos and the brand story of what we were trying to do. So when I came in, people already got it. So it's like, I really had nothing to do. Where we were struggling was like, how do we take it over the line and bring it to market? I'm like, that's the easy part, like changing the logo and a couple colors and get it out into the places that it needs to be. Like the hard part is making sure the company lives it and understands it. So for me, it was like the easiest thing to come into. We wrote this blog post about the steps that the company went through. And I kind of came in at probably step number 6 or 7. And so, you know, my role was just to basically say like, get off the pot, let's go, like, let's get this stuff done. And that's like super easy to do. And all the company actually needed was that nudge to do that last bit to say, okay, we're going to update the logo and get the colors out there and update our voice and stuff. And I think now what we're trying to do is work on that evolution and make sure that we're really leaning into who we are and we're not losing that core DNA of who the company was, but are making sure that we're also kind of like, you know, the brand's evolved to make sure that we're still talking to the other types of companies and segments that we're looking to serve as well.
Yeah, because FreshBooks, they had not undergone a rebrand process in like 15 years, like prior to you arriving, right? So it'd been a while.
Yeah. and it was kind of funny. Like there was a moment where, you know, I think that sometimes inertia is easy and just making decisions is hard. So one of the things that I've always gravitated towards is just make the call and get moving on things. So I'm definitely much more kind of predisposed to action and not getting into kind of analysis paralysis and really focusing on just moving things forward. Because unless you move forward, you're never going to learn. You're not going to be able to understand what things are going well. When we relaunched the brand, we took it to market. We tested it down and picked a couple markets in Texas to see what the response would be. We got our brand lift studies. We're like, great, like everything's working. So now let's go full bore and roll this thing out globally. So we had a pretty methodical approach to how we rolled it out, but it's just saying like committing to it and saying, okay, we're gonna get it done. I think that's where most organizations get tripped up, as well as just making sure, like, especially with something like brand, like no customer is gonna tell us, I really wish you would rebrand. Like no customer ever has said that in the history of the world. It's all internal. Like this was for us, it was about a recommitment to our customers, us making sure that we knew what our core DNA was all about and what we're doing. And then just making sure as we took it to market that it worked. And so, you know, I think with all of these types of things, it's just like, it's all about making sure that the company and the employees understand what it's all about so that we're living and breathing it in everything that we do.
So how did you test brand messaging and brand advertising?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, we took it to market and did a bunch of that campaign down in Texas. And we looked at Lyft. I mean, here's the rub. Like, so we launched the campaign, I think, on March the 4th of 2020. So within a couple of weeks, there was a bunch of lockdowns and this whole kind of nastiness around COVID that sort of got in the way of us getting a super clean read. But regardless, it's like, you know, we looked at it, we saw what was happening. We got like our actual business in that area. did not even suffer at all. So it just kept going. We got a little bit of churn, but we didn't see much. Like, we're actually up year over year, where a lot of other companies were experiencing a pretty heavy downturn. So notionally, we got it back. We knew it was going to work. So we said, great, let's just pick the appropriate timing. We were originally planning on launching everything in May. So we just pushed that timing to September, just to give, to go into market at the appropriate time. So we weren't doing anything that was just not being mindful of the whole fact of COVID and the impact it was having on businesses.
Got it. So like most new CMOs, you also went through a reorganization when you took over. What does your team look like? And what are some of the areas you were focused on aligning when you took over?
You know, there's this debate around in-house versus agency support. And we definitely, one of the areas that I focused on was building out an in-house performance team, which is all of our SEM, you know, display, social, SEO activity, affiliate marketing. And so we have all of those capabilities in-house. We had some people in those areas before, but we really kind of doubled down on that and eliminated our agency partnerships at that time in that area. And we have a few kind of contractors and consultants, some of which are ex-FreshBookers as well, that we have for ebbs and flows. One area that we really, I wouldn't say we were strong when I came in, was just in terms of our marketing strategy and what we were really doing to drive growth. So we built out a team there who is just, you know, maniacally focused on channel management and segment ownership. So they're really looking at, like, how do we grow in different markets against the different types of segments? What are the nuances that we need to be mindful of from a market standpoint, whether it's, like, you know, just purely messaging in our ads to how do people speak differently? Because some, you know, in the UK, they might talk about invoicing differently than we do in the US. So we always just have to be really, really mindful of how we do things and not kind of fall into some of those gaffes that other brands have done when they go into different markets. So that was a kind of a key piece. And then a lot of the other parts were, like, you know, we had a really strong lifecycle marketing team. We didn't have a focused marketing ops function. So we built that out. And so it's just getting some of those other kind of key pieces. And then it was about the integration of the other teams, because, you know, PR wasn't in marketing and the product marketing team was in product. So we brought everybody together and then really had tried to bring more clarity in terms of everyone's roles. Because once you bring all these different roles together, you're going to have overlap. And so that was kind of a big piece, which is still kind of, like, always a bit of a moving target in terms of making sure that our working relationships internally are as good as they can be.
So within your own department, I mean, you have a brand council, right? So it focuses on maintaining the voice of the customer and new initiatives that involve branding.
Yeah.
How did this council even come about? Like, what led to its formation?
So it's actually the brand council's a cross-company initiative. So we've got people in support. There's people in product, there's people in user experience from product, there's folks within marketing. It's led by marketing, but it brings everybody together to really look at the customer experience. And so, you know, when you talk about brand, I think brand is, you know, it's something that we put on paper and we have, there are a whole bunch of words, and it's trying to be like a set of behaviors that the organization is going to have. And then sometimes you deliver on them well, and sometimes you don't. But at the end of it, it comes into the customer's mind in terms of what the brand is. So as much as we define a brand or define the brand strategy, the brand is defined in the minds of the customer. So what the intent of the brand council is really about, like, the experience. And so the experience has to be, we have to create experiences for all of those strategies to then be implemented. It's not just a thing that's done in advertising, where a lot of brand work kind of focuses. It's more about, like, how do we make sure that we're interacting with people in the way that they walk away and they're like, man, that company is blank, and really focusing on that. So that's where, you know, I always kind of look at, like, what are the things that we can do throughout the journey that a customer might have, or the life cycle that the customer may have with us, that really kind of hones in on those different pieces. So if we're really about being supporting owners, how can we do that? And then give the guidance to the brand council team to help come up with different ideas for us to then work on implementation across the company. So this is something I think we're doing a good job of. I think what we need to do is turn it from a council into someone's job. and where we're looking at customer experience and unifying that experience and having the orchestration across the company to make sure that we're delivering on that every day and creating those like extraordinary experiences.
So Peter Thiel talks about when you're very competitive, you get good at the thing you're competing with people on, but it comes at the expense of losing out on many other things. So I'm curious, are there areas where you've consciously tried to pull back on the competitiveness?
Yeah, I think that when you get really, really kind of myopically focused on trying to beat someone, you can start to get tunnel visioned at where the real opportunities are. So I think the biggest challenge that exists is like if you're chasing your competition, you're just going to be getting into probably a bit of a feature slugfest, and you're always just trying to play the catch up game as to having the next big thing. So it's just going to be an arms race of features. As opposed to looking at like, how do I outflank? How do I leapfrog and go around what the competitors are doing by understanding the customer more? So, you know, we have our eyes on who we want to beat, but one thing that we run like a planning process, a quarterly product planning process where, you know, anybody in the company can bring forward a recommendation that they want to have in terms of growing one of the key company growth areas, whether it's user growth, whether it's like our average revenue per customer, whether it's like a core like conversion or churn. And within that, we have different owners on the exec team who sponsor the ideas. And so that's where we are really looking at making sure that we've got the eye into the future, into that like more the 5 to 10 year horizon, and aren't just always like playing the catch up game or trying to make sure that or making sure that we're kind of looking much more broadly at the market. The challenge there, though, is then making sure the organization knows where we're going. So if we're thinking 5 to 10 years out, like there still needs to be some set of parameters that we're focused on. So you know, we have to make sure that people understand what we're trying to achieve from a user's growth standpoint or from an ARPU standpoint, and that they're looking at recommending things and big programs that will have guidance in terms of helping drive an owner's business forward.
So, of course, the name of the show is Marketing Trends. So I would be remiss if I didn't ask you this question. What current trends in the industry are you currently following? What are some of the things that excite you about the future of SaaS marketing?
Yeah, it's I think like from just a marketing standpoint, there's this great like fear that we're just regressing back to like 2004 or something like that with this big cookie deprecation. And so nobody knows, or a lot of the folks that I work with today, they weren't really working at that time, so they don't know what it was like. But I think that this is the biggest unknown right now. So it's just really, how is the world going to behave in this kind of cookieless or where cookies are going away? So I think that's like the biggest trend that's like staring us in the face as to what we need to do in terms of the immediate future. So we're really kind of looking at that right now. And I look at this as being exciting because it's like, hey, should we go out and start buying affiliate partners? Do we need to double down in terms of being a media company on our own? So that we can start to stitch together. I think there's going to be a different look that all of us SaaS marketers could have in terms of like doing data sharing and how can in this world of integrations and platforms integration with other platforms and stuff, like where did the rights for passing data start and stop in our GDPR world too? So it's like, I think there's a lot of unknown still that we have. And there's just a lot of use cases that we could map out. So I think there's some exciting times there. And the one area that I'm kind of like a little, you know, unhappy with was, yeah, I thought there'd be a lot more progress in terms of like the future of AI and machine learning and its impact on marketing. Back in 2009 and 10, I worked a lot with a bunch of data scientists. And one of the areas that I was like really pushing on was like, how can we as marketers automate creativity? And so we've done a pretty good job in bringing machine learning to the optimization of media, but we haven't done it in terms of the optimization of creative messaging. And we haven't done it where we brought those things together. So, you know, there's great companies like Phrasee who's helping do stuff as it relates to email subject lines and body copy and social words, but we're not tying together pictures. And so when I was at Shutterstock, that was a big kind of area that we were exploring, because there's a ton of point solutions who are solving a piece of it, But I really wish one day I can just speak into a Google Enterprise speaker. I can brief it, and then it would. Then I could just get a whole bunch of ads kicked out where I can just select them, and with a bunch of pictures and videos from folks in the stock space, and then a whole bunch of words, and I can create 270 different variants that we can then launch into the different social channels. Yeah. One day. I can dream.
That's right. One day. You know, we had the CMO of LivePerson on a couple of weeks ago, Amber Armstrong, and I'm curious if conversational AI is being integrated at all, or at least interested in the kind of FreshBooks layout.
Yeah, it's something we're definitely talking about, you know, in terms of like, what's that next generation of interaction? You know, it's kind of funny because as when we talk about this stuff, there's still like, most small businesses still are just doing their accounting and invoicing and bookkeeping in either in pen and paper or just in Excel spreadsheets. So, you know, they're still not even used to just like taking a picture of a receipt with their mobile phone. So there's still a bit of an uphill work effort required just to digitize a lot of small businesses. So, but there is, I think, a lot of really interesting use cases in terms of like how you can start to, bring these SaaS products and where there is no interaction with the platform at all, and just doing readouts and helping people, whether it's like understanding what their expenses were last month or what the top five list is that they need to do for their morning, where you can build that stuff off of the data in our platform. There's some really interesting use cases there.
Awesome. All right, we've got a few minutes left. I have one more question, and then I've got some kind of hot seat questions if we have time.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite failure? You know, meaning something that seemed like a failure at the time that really ended up just setting the stage for something better.
Yeah. I started a company called Feast in the food area. So if you're from New York, it was a very similar model to Maple. Or Muntry, which was a little bit broader, but it was doing on-demand food delivery. We managed the full stack with a bunch of commercial kitchens and did that delivery in 10 minutes or less of the food item. So it was interesting, you know, built out a team, a ton of money was going into the space. It was a hot category. We launched just a month after Maple up in Toronto. Wanting to build out and obviously scale the company into multiple markets, but it didn't work. And I think it just reminded me of one thing that where I'm a big believer in just like, you know, fail fast, like get proof of concept through learning and through kind of like some channels or as many places that you can figure out if there's demand for things like, you know, launch Facebook ads and build a microsite and see if there's demand for a product before you even have the product. But it's one of those things where we got it to market, we could never get the unit economics to make sense. And really for me, I was like, we probably invested way too much in terms of like the commercial kitchen space and building out these places as opposed to looking at a more scalable way to build out the operations. And I stopped listening to my gut and I started listening to other people in the food space because I didn't think I knew enough about food. But at the end of it, once we started talking to customers, like they cared about a food profile, but they didn't care that much about like exactly where things were sourced and stuff like that. They just wanted to know it was healthy. And if they could trust that it was, then they didn't want to go any further. And so we could have delivered that, but in a much more cost-effective way, and we had a really different model. But it's one of those things where you live and learn. Every time I find that I've made a mistake, it's because I'm not listening to my gut and I'm listening to errant advice from other people.
I love that. All right. So I'll pull one question from the lightning round brought to you by Salesforce. We bring marketing and engagement together. Learn more at salesforce.com/marketing. What's your best advice for a first-time CMO?
Yeah, 100% focus on what you can actually control and influence. A CMO can focus on priorities for their team, the organization of their team, and making sure they know what success is, you know, and constantly going in and making sure that the team is not getting adding too many things that aren't going to actually drive where you need to go. So constantly going in and making sure the priorities are there and constantly going in and making sure that you've got the people in the chairs that you need to be delivering on what you need to do.
Fantastic. Paul, so grateful to have you on the show. This was exceptional conversation. There's no doubt that you are the right CMO for FreshBooks, and And man, this company is certainly poised for even more. So we're honored to have you, and thanks for taking time today.
Awesome. Thanks, Jeremy.
You have 8 seconds to make a connection or risk a click away onto the next topic. The difference lies in your ability to deliver relevant experiences to your audience across devices and across channels. But delivering on a really great experience is impossible without the right people and the right technology. You've got the right people, but your technology choices will make or break someone's experience with your brand. At the center of gravity of your digital experience, Brightspot Content Management System can deliver relevant content, personalized experiences, and cross-channel synergies to create unforgettable brand experiences so you can be a bright spot in someone's day. Head over to brightspot.com/marketing trends to find out right now. From global crisis to hunger relief efforts, the messages you deliver save lives, inform important decision-making, and help keep communities safe and sound. The speed and scale of your content needs to be delivered faster and on a much larger scale. Brightspot Content Management System has supported some of the world's largest brands to communicate on a global scale. From Johnson & Johnson sharing critical information with their customers to helping Whole Foods tell their brand story to a global audience. Brightspot is designed to handle rapid iteration and personalized messages to those you care about most. Learn more at brightspot.com/marketing trends.